1 Corinthians chapter 10. I suppose that we've heard enough preaching out of the books of Corinthians to know that the church at Corinth was a less than perfect church. Probably a lot along the lines of the churches that we're familiar with. Now, you probably would take offense to say that you are comparable to the church at Corinth based on some of the issues that the church of Corinth had. But I'm not necessarily referring to the specific details of the church at Corinth, just that, you know, that we might be less than perfect. Now, chapter 10 begins with a word "moreover," so it kind of indicates to me, once again, that the chapter divisions may harm us in our understanding better, more than help us. But he's telling us that he doesn't want the hearers, followers, to be ignorant. And we could probably even attach this somewhat to what I was saying this morning, that we have to be careful in examining ourselves. We have to be looking at ourselves. We have to be paying attention. We don't know what tomorrow holds. As a matter of fact, Paul says here that all of them were under the cloud, and all of them passed through the sea, and all of them baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and they all did eat the same spiritual meat, and they all did drink the same spiritual drink. But then we find out that even though all of them had that same foundation, had those same experiences, that some things, some circumstances, or some people, whatever case may be, came into their pathways, into their lives, and caused some of them some problems. Some of them, it says that God was not well pleased with them, and they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things in verse 6 are for our example. He's sharing these things for us to understand that we are human, we're people. People are people the world round. We get on down here to verse number 12. Paul puts it pretty blunt here to the church at Corinth, and I believe that it's pretty blunt for us, but vital for us to acknowledge as well. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Then we like that verse 13 because it gives us something to hang on to in the midst of adversity or in the midst of trial or temptation, as it's used here. That we won't be tempted above what we're able, but there's also a way of escape and the bearing of that temptation. We really grab a hold of that verse. Verse number 14, he says, "Wherefore," again that word "wherefore," gives us something to look into. What is he saying this for? There's a whole bunch of stuff that he's wrapping up into this word, "wherefore." "My dearly beloved, flee from idolatry." What? I want us to listen this evening to a man by the name of David Platt. He is a pastor in Birmingham, Alabama, with the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, I'm not advocating all their doctrines and all that sort of thing. He is the president of their convention, International Missions. He's well known among their circles, and he's becoming more and more well known among our circles because he just lays it out. He begins this little clip that I want us to listen to this evening, and he's asking for the listener to use our imaginations and put ourselves in the position of a visitor, to view what is normal to us from or with the eye of a newcomer. That's hard to do because we have the vision of what we see. We have our perceptions. But he's trying to get us to imagine what it would be like if we were a visitor. And viewing the scenery that is common to us with the eye of a newcomer. Now, don't get lost in the specificity of his subject. Don't get lost in what he is using as the point of discussion for himself, and that is sports. Don't get lost in the subject of sports. Listen for the message of what he's saying. And then he brings it to a close, down to a close with some questions. I want you to listen to it. Just a short clip, David Platt.
Imagine for a moment that you live in another country, one completely foreign to this one. And you have an opportunity one fall to spend a week in Birmingham. So you come on a Sunday morning, and you observe many people, maybe even most, slowly rising to make their way to a building they call a church. They groggily approach that building for some sort of ceremony. Clearly, whatever happens at the beginning of that ceremony is not that important, because most of the people don't come until after it has started. I'm not looking at anybody. I'm just saying. And so you watch them file in and begin to mouth the words to songs, many of them almost expressionless, virtually emotionless, after which they sit down and passively listen to someone talk to them for a period of time. You notice people starting to get a bit fidgety, uneasy, at the time for the ceremony to end approaches. When it's finally over, they quickly walk out. But as you walk with them, you listen to them, and you hear many of them talking with one another about something that had happened the previous day. They smile, and they laugh as they recount another ceremony they'd been to, apparently a bit more interesting than this one. A ceremony that happens, apparently, on Saturdays. In fact, the rest of the week, that's almost all you hear people talking about, the coming Saturday ceremony. Even the people who were at the Sunday ceremony are strangely silent about what they heard and sang about there, but very enthusiastic about the Saturday. They can't seem to get here soon enough. So as your curiosity is piqued, you begin to eagerly anticipate the coming Saturday ceremony with them. That Saturday comes, and you see people wake up and leave their houses dressed in some sort of outfit that they love to wear for these types of days. Many of them drive out of the city, some an hour west. Others a couple of hours south, where they gather together on what they call hallowed grounds for the Saturday ceremony. They get there early for this ceremony, way early, where they eat and drink and laugh and play, not just with their family or with their friends, but with complete strangers. You've never seen community like this. And when the time comes, they all, tens of thousands of them, enter a shrine together. You can't think of another word for it. Where they raise their voices with passion to applaud some sort of assembly of children they don't know playing a game on a field. As that game begins, they shout and chant and sing until they virtually lose their voices with far more passion than the previous Sunday ceremony, for sure. People don't look at their watches at this ceremony. They're so engulfed in what they're seeing and experiencing, and they actually get excited when it goes into what they call overtime, because going long like this is a sign of a really exciting game. And the fun doesn't end after the ceremony is over anyway. When the boys that everybody has been cheering for win the game, the celebration has only begun. And the amazing thing is that it's not just the people who are at the ceremony who are celebrating. You come to find out that back in Birmingham, thousands and thousands of others who couldn't get here stayed there to watch this game on what they call a TV, though many of them are large enough to be virtual movie screens. They're actually designed that way to make the most of watching ceremonies like this. And back in Birmingham, scores of people have circled up together around their screens to be a part of the ceremony from a distance. They too, in their homes, are jumping up and down and high-fiving each other, celebrating the ceremony when it's over. And then, when it's all over, late in the evening, almost as if there's nothing to be prepared for the next day, they go to bed. So let me ask you a question. If you were that visitor from another country and you came to this city on a week during the fall, be honest, which would you identify as the religion that is most important to this people? As the religion that most excites this people? As the religion that most consumes this people? We live in a land where sports war for our attention and our affections and our devotion, our time, our money. And it's not just college football. That's the glaring example. Particularly as we enter in this fall, that's the timing even for this. But it's professional sports as well. It's children's sports. It's playing sports and watching sports and running our children all over the city and the state for the sake of sports. Whether it's football or golf, basketball or baseball, soccer or CrossFit, running or biking or swimming, gymnastics or cheerleading, or any number of other athletic activities to which we devote so much of our lives and our families' lives too. Oh, to this church in Birmingham, we are not too far removed from the church at Corinth. We, in a land covered with church buildings and filled with professing Christians, are tempted every single week to commune with Christ on Sunday, only to dine with idols every other day, particularly Saturday. And we must consider how to flee idolatry and live every single moment in Birmingham, eating, drinking, and even playing to the glory of God.
Lays it out pretty tight, doesn't he? And it's not just sports. You know, he focused on sports, but it could be anything. As we look at ourselves and stare at ourselves in the mirror, it could be work, it could be family, it could be pleasure, entertainment, whatever it is that takes our devotion away from church and spiritual communion. He said, tempted every single week to commune with Christ on Sunday, only to dine with idols every other day, particularly Saturday, he said. And we must consider how to flee idolatry. Now, sometimes it's hard to stand in a place like this and preach or say some things that, you know, may step on somebody's toes, but sometimes I'm really not convinced of the true spiritual communion that's going on even on the sacred Lord's Day. Sometimes we come to church and we're eager to get going with the family gatherings afterwards, or family just keeps us from church, or we're eager to get back to work. Know how we've broadened what is acceptable for or necessary for working on Sunday. We come to church and got to be careful. I know I need to be careful, but kids allowed to talk and play and laugh and sleep. As soon as they sit down, they start to snuggle themselves in for a good nap. Not just an occasional thing, but it seems like it's every Sunday that there's something going on that is taking our attention away. Maybe it isn't vital scripturally to attend church services two times on a Sunday. But I'm pretty sure that it is vital of keeping the Lord's Day holy, and it is scriptural. And quite frankly, this evening, I wonder about our excuses and our reasonings that dismiss church services as an option, or the hallowedness of the day as Old Testament. It's the last Sunday of the year. Looking into a year ahead of us, and we see the decline of peoples and groups and country all around us. We try to pinpoint what those declines are. And I wonder if David Platt nailed it. It could be summed up in idolatry. Something that is taking our devotion away from what it ought to be. The word idolatry found in the dictionary has to do with adoration and devotion. But what are we devoted to? Well, he specifically mentions one thing, but how broad can that be for us? For ourselves? No, I'm not like his church, or we're not like his church in Birmingham, Alabama. But what about, what are our circumstances? What are we devoted to? Is it possible for somebody to, with visitor eyes, look at us and say, yes, they are devoted to corporate worship? Forsake not the assembling, bringing ourselves in for that corporate worship. And I'm thinking that maybe we are drifting away from the necessity of corporate prayer, corporate worship, that gathering together, the necessity of bringing ourselves in and really, really being devoted in that worship. Or just simply the Lord's Day. Somehow we've gotten to the idea that the Old Testament Sabbath means so very little today, and yet we would be the first ones to say the Ten Commandments are relevant to our day. They're timeless pieces. If it's timeless and relevant for our day, then what about that one that specifies the Lord's Day or the Sabbath, and the New Testament transfers and translates it to the Lord's Day? Devoted. As we look at a new year, what are we and who are we devoted to? Platt asks us some serious questions, some very straightforward questions.
So let me ask you a question. If you were that visitor from another country and you came to this city on a week during the fall, be honest. Which would you identify as the religion that is most important to this people? As the religion that most excites this people? As the religion that most consumes this people?
Speaks to my heart. You can take it or leave it. I think it should speak to all of us, either with correction or with warning. God help us. God help me. Let's stand together tonight.